Welcome to The Double Up. I'm Shannon Hughes.
And I'm Rachel Tilley. And we're here to serve as the voice of women surfing.
This week, we cover a handful of new films on the horizon, give an update on Queen of the Bay, follow up on the Vans Pro and the Roxy Vahine Cup, and catch up for a pre-heat interview with Tatiana Weston-Webb.
Shannon, I am really excited for this intro conversation because I have a story for you that we did not hang out this weekend. So I actually have something to share with you and everyone listening.
I'm so excited to finally hear how your camping trip went because you sent some texts through, but I refrained from phoning you before we were just recording.
Well, starting out with the fact that I have definitely learned two things. That I am flight over fight and that I am more scared of bears than sharks. So basically, I went camping with my best friend, Keely, my other best friend, Keely.
Other best friend.
You're my best friend. Keely's my best friend. So we went camping in the Angeles National Forest, which is like an hour in from Los Angeles, if you can tell by the name. And I went camping with her. I went camping with her boyfriend, Michael, and then one of his friends. And we just planned to go there for the night and got everything set up. And after we got everything set up and it kind of started to cool down a bit because it was really hot during the day, we decided that we were going to go on a hike. And we were literally just talking about bears. So I'm looking around at all of these hills and there are like barely any trees. It is all very dry bush. And we were talking about bears. And I'm like, I'm fairly confident there are zero bears in a 10-mile radius of us. Like, if you were a bear, why would you live in these mountains? Like, not that it wasn't beautiful. Like, it was beautiful. But geez, if I was a bear, like, go live up in Yosemite or something. Or Alaska. Like, do not live in...
Like, Los Angeles. Basically living in
Los
Angeles.
Yeah, these are city bears. These are like the city bears of the mountains. So the timing was like impeccable because literally as we're talking about that and we're starting our hike and this guy from this campsite, like five spots down from us, because we're like in actual, you know, like a camping ground.
You're like in a campground. Yeah.
Yeah. So this guy five campsites down from us was like, hey guys, just so you know. And we had just my friend's dog with us. It's just like this little puppy. It's only 4 months and he's super cute. His name is Max. And we're taking him on the walk with us. And this guy is like, hey guys, just so you know, this bear just approached me at my campsite. And we were like, oh, are you serious? Like, yeah, there's bear signs around, but there's actually bears here. And he was like, yeah, it wasn't like super aggressive. Like, you know, I was able to kind of scare it off. But just so you know, like exactly where you're like walking towards is literally where it just was. And we're like, okay, well then we won't go on that hike. We'll just go on like this little walk instead and go watch the sunset and, you know, enjoy the evening, hopefully not hanging out with a bear.
Yeah.
And so that all passes and we go back, you know, whatever, later on in the night, we are at our campfire cooking dinner. And we made some kebabs and some potatoes. And all of a sudden we hear this like person honking their horn, like, bam, 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 like on purpose, you know, like something's going on. And we just like all looked at each other and we're like, okay, if someone's trying to like warn someone, like people in the campsite, like that sounds like a warning. And this is initially where I learned that I am flight over fight because I'm literally just like holding my plate of kebabs and I like start sprinting to the car and I have no idea what to do with my kebab. So I literally just like drop them in the dirt and run. And I get into the car before everyone else. Like my friend Keely's still like trying to unhook the dog from the leash and stuff. And I'm like, my dinner's on the dirt and I'm already sitting in the car.
You threw your food?
I literally just like dropped everything there. My everything just gone. There was no table around me and I had no time to find a table. I just had to drop.
But you couldn't bring it to the car with you?
Nope. I was in panic mode. I just dropped it. And so we're then like sitting in the car going, oh my gosh, okay, like, what now? And then those same people, like their car alarm just like started going on and on and on. And they were like letting it go. And we're like, okay, maybe we should go like check it out to see if they're okay. So we went and found them. And like, it kind of alerted everyone else in the campsite too. Like everyone was kind of getting in their cars and like driving over to make sure these people were okay. And they were just like, yeah, look, it was just a bear. Like, we're just trying to scare it off. And we're like, oh my gosh. Like, at this point, it's already 9 o'clock at night. And we're like, oh gosh, this bear is like hanging out. And it was kind of like farther down the hill. And so Keely's boyfriend is like, you know what? It's okay. It's like staying low level. It's staying down the mountain. And we're talking down the mountain as in like drive 30 seconds downhill. And he's like, it's down the mountain. Like, we're not talking about like down the mountain
or anything. But it's very, very much just in your vicinity still.
But I was like, okay, but yeah, it's lower level. Like, it's not wanting to climb uphill. That's too much.
And you're trying to convince yourself of this also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we then get back to our campsite and we're like kind of trying to be like, you know what, it's all good. And I think we went to bed probably like 12 o'clock. Keely and I are like laying in the tent. And then like all these coyotes start howling. And then like the people's car alarm starts going off again. And we're just staring at each other in this tent like, oh my gosh, we are not going to get any sleep tonight. We can hear them like banging a wooden spoon like against pots and stuff. And like, being like, oh, like trying to like, I don't know, make trying to like make noise and scare it away. Ooh. And we were just like...
Great bear scaring noises.
I know. I don't know. They were just trying to like be loud. And we were just like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare. And then we heard this like firework go off. And we were like, okay, who is setting up fireworks at a time like this? Like, this is a scary time, not a time to be having fun. Plus, the mountain is like about to light on fire, you know? And
oh yeah, we're in like major drought in California. So that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's super dry. It's like, it's so crispy. So fireworks are not a good idea, but I'll circle back to that point in a second. So I literally don't know anything about bears, except like the one golden rule of like, don't leave food out. And so we like packed everything up. I even went back into the dirt and like picked up literally every single piece of like meat and potato so that there was nothing, literally nothing. And I was like, okay. And Keely had this like little alarm keychain thing that you can like, I don't know, like pull and it goes like, wee, 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 wee. You know, like really
loud. Oh, like
if
you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And Keely's like, okay, I'm going to bring this into the tent with us just in case, you know. So everything's packed up and we're laying in the tent and everything apparently was not packed up because apparently we left one cooler out. One cooler got missed and we're all laying there.
Well, I just...
Yep. Well, it was like, yeah, like a soft cooler. And all of a sudden we hear these like big footsteps, like go past, like dragging in the dirt. And we just like are staring at each other in the dark going like, no. And Keely's boyfriend sits up and like looks out of the tent, like out of the screen. And there's a bear like literally 10 feet away from us, our tent. And he's trying to like get into our cooler and he starts like thrashing it around. And Keely and I are just like laying. Michael's like, okay, stay still, stay still. Keely's body was literally vibrating. She was like so terrified. And we have their puppy like in between us too.
Oh, yeah, the puppy.
Yeah, we were so scared that Max was going to like bark and give us away. And Keely was like, I'm worried maybe like Max might sound like a tasty treat to him. Like, what do we do? And we're just like, okay, we want to like scare him away, but also we don't want him to like get any, like we also don't want him to know that we're here. So how, like, what do we do in this situation? We just felt so underprepared. We just laid there and I gave the alarm to Michael. He was like sitting there ready with it. And we just like listened to it. And it was like, it opened the cooler. It ate all the food. I literally heard it like crunch into the eggs. Like the,
that's so
gosh,
scary.
With all my noises, this could be one of those like AMSR podcasts. So crunches into the eggs. He literally like picks up every single chair in our campsite and moves it. He like knocks a mug off of the picnic bench. Like, it was just...
He made himself at home.
He made himself at home. He ate all of our intended breakfast for the next morning. And so finally, Michael, like, pulls the alarm. And the bear does not flinch. Like, the bear doesn't move. And we're like, oh my gosh, like, our one line of defense. Are you kidding me? And I'm like, okay, Michael, like, where are your car keys? You know, like, maybe we should set off the car alarm. And he's like, oh, I left them in the car. And I'm like, you left them in the car? What were you thinking? And he's like, this is not the conversation we need to be having right now. And I'm like, okay, okay, true. Sorry. And so then, like, he turned the alarm off and we, like, let him go. The bear, like, keep hanging out for a little longer. And we try again. And then finally it scurries off and we get out of the car. We scurry out of our tent and run to our car and, like, beep the car horn a couple more times to, like, make sure it's fleed. And then we drive away. Like, we just want to get away from the crime scene. And we kind of do, like, a lap around the loop of campsites. So, like, if anyone's, it's like 1:30 at this point, and to, like, see if anyone's still awake, you know, we can kind of warn them. And the guy who saw the bear earlier in the day was still awake. And so we, like, drove up to his site and said, hey, just so you know, a bear just, like, came through our campsite. And he was like, oh, yeah. Ate all the eggs. Do you have any eggs we can borrow? No, not really. But he said, oh, yeah, bear just came through my campsite and about 20 minutes ago. And it would not go away. It just kept, like, getting closer and closer. So I... like, fired a warning gunshot at it to scare it away. And so not only am I flight, but here I'm hearing gunshots and thinking they're fireworks. So I literally have learned I have zero survival skills. So obviously that bear, like, got scared away from his one. And then he would have come, like, just up to our area and we fed him a nice little snack. And so then we pulled into a different campsite because we didn't want to return to the crime of the scene, the scene of the crime. And we literally just, like, four people and a dog sleeping in this car. I was, like, sitting up in the driver's seat. And oh my gosh, it was just like, we got no sleep. And turns out Michael, Keely's boyfriend, brought potato chips into the tent with us, him that night, which... we then got back to the tent in the morning and the bear had gotten into the tent and eaten the potato chips as well. And we were like, are you serious? You brought food into the tent? Like, if we had not fled or it had, like, it could have come to the tent first. Like, what were you thinking? Anyways, we survived. We were traumatized, but I will say the bear wasn't interested, it didn't seem, in eating us, obviously. Just the eggs. But the scary part was just, like, being so unfamiliar with this.
What to do when there's a wild animal that could kill you rummaging through your things outside of a nylon tent.
Exactly. And, like, I think I learned in second grade, it was like, if it's a black bear, stand tall. If it's a brown bear, play dead. And I'm like, what?
Does that your teacher sounded like?
Yep. That's what my second grade teacher sounded like. So I just... and apparently I've learned black bears can actually also have brown fur. So I have no idea, like, what to do. None of us did. And obviously we survived. We lived to tell the story. We lived to tell the tale. But it was just, like, a bit traumatizing. And now I feel like I need to go and two things. Watch some bear documentaries to feel a little bit more prepared. And then also just work on being a survivalist. Work on my survival skills and being more, I think when it came down to it, like, you know, I was definitely more calm than Keely was. So maybe I was a little more, maybe I'm a little more fight than flight compared to Keely to throw her under the bus.
Trembling friend.
But we were both trembling and Michael was actually the one who, you know, scared it off and, like, made it happen. So anyways, it was a dramatic camping experience. I've never had that happen before. And I now definitely have a fair bit of homework before we go camping again. Or I'll just stay to camping at beaches.
That is definitely a safe one. If you camp on any beach in California, surely you're safe from the bears.
Yeah,
but that's so scary because it's just something that's so unknown.
Totally. I think so too. So there's my weekend.
I'm so glad you're okay.
I am so glad I'm okay too. Whew. Just made it up. But now it's exciting. I've had a bear experience, I guess.
You've had a very, very close encounter bear experience.
And I am more of, I'm an ocean person.
I'm with you there. When I was in like junior high backpacking with my parents in Yosemite, they used to backpack all the time. And so they've got like tons of bear stories.
Oh my gosh.
But they're just, something that like people become comfortable with and they just know the ropes. You know, you like hang your food up high over the tree or carry a bear canister with you when you're like literally backpacking out in the middle of nowhere and you only have your tent.
Yeah.
So scary. I'm really glad we don't have to deal with that in normal life. We deal with sharks instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Shannon, if you'd like to go camping sometime, maybe you can bring your parents' bear canisters with us.
Bear spray. That's a thing.
Yes, I know. All these things that I'm learning now. We literally did everything wrong and nothing right besides survive. So next time.
At least you got that thing right.
Next time we'll try and do more things right than that.
Well, after a bearable intro.
Oh my gosh, that was.
Can you get out of my mouth?
That is staying in. Oh my gosh, that was horrible. Should we get into it? Let's
get into it. And now into our top news stories from this week in Women Surf.
Shannon, before we dive into our first news story for this week, last week we covered the fact that Girls Can't Surf is now premiering in the UK and Ireland. And Sally McGee, found at Surf Yonder on Instagram, sent us a message and she said, "Hey, just listening to your latest podcast and heard you mention that Girls Can't Surf is showing in the UK. We are so excited that we teamed up with a local cinema to premiere it in the northeast of England amongst our community and ticket sales and have now reached 260, so they've had to put us in the largest screen. How rad is that? The female surf scene is pretty fledgling up here, but growing and moving in such a rad direction. What a night it'll be. Can't wait. September 16th. Shannon, that is so awesome. I love hearing that. And that's just so exciting to hear that their women's surf community is growing up there and that everyone's getting really excited about this. And if you're listening and you're from that area, September 16th sounds like the night that you have to join and will be really fun.
That is so awesome. I love that they have been upgraded from the smaller...
I know, that's so cool.
I don't know what
from
you call
the
that, theater?
Screen?
From the smaller theater?
Yeah, theater.
To the big screen. To the biggest. That's so awesome.
The biggest.
So stoked for you girls. Thanks so much, Sally McGee, Surf Yonder, for sharing that with us. And hope it all goes really well. Rach, there's actually a lot of really great surf films that have been premiering over the last little while. So I thought that we could dive into that as our first news topic for the week.
Yes, absolutely. I am excited to talk about these.
So first off, premiering this Sunday, September the 4th at the Ritz in Randwick, Sydney, Australia, is Below the Surface, which is part of the Women's Adventure Tour. That's going to be heading out all around Australia. You can find them on Instagram and online. And Below the Surface features our good friend Lucy Small, sharing her story of her fight for equal pay within Australian surfing that's gained so much momentum around the world. And I'm just stoked that they have made a film about it. And there's three different women that banded together for this project. They did it out of the goodness of their own hearts, with their own money, and without any major funding behind them. And now being included in the Women's Adventure Tour, I think is a really great step in the right direction. It trails the story of Lucy Small, as well as Kate Allman and another girl named Tilly, talking about hockey and netball. So it kind of encapsulates those three sports together. And it's produced by Danny Hansen, Chloe Keeley is the director, and Stephanie Gillespie is the director of photography. So if anyone is in Sydney this coming weekend, go check it out at the Ritz.
Yeah, I think they all have some really great stories to tell. So I know Below the Surface will be a great one. And Shannon, you and I will definitely be catching up on it when we can. The second one that we wanted to talk about today is the Physics of Nose Riding. It is premiering this week. Well, not this weekend. It's premiering maybe this weekend. I guess it's August 31st. It's premiering at the Women's Surf Film Festival, which is happening between September 5th to the 10th over in New York. And The Physics of Nose Riding, Shannon, just seems like, it seems like such a cool film. It is directed by the Sea Kin, which is Lauren Hill, featuring Lola Mignot, Leah Dawson, Ari Brown, Belinda Baggs, Josie Prendergast, Rosie Jeffers, Crystal Thornburg-Holmsey, Dave Rastovich, Lauren Hill, Crystal Zegas, Elise Trigger, Matt Cootie, Jalon Slab, Ashley Hilmer, and Kalise Kaleopa'a. So this, I'll read the little spiel that Women's Surf Film Festival has posted about it, because I feel like they tell it a lot more eloquently than I can actually describe. So it says, "The science of surfing's perfect dance. The nose ride is an iconic surfing move, part fluid dynamics, part magic. But how does nose riding actually work? What makes the suspension between sea and sky even possible? The Physics of Nose Riding explores the question through the eyes of Nimala, a young surfer whose people were flying on water long before the world knew what surfing even was. She takes us on a journey from mystery to mastery as the wave, the surfboard, and the surfer come together for surfing's perfect dance." So I think this one looks so fun. There's so many talented surfers in it, and just takes such an interesting angle into a surf film and looks just really fun. And I wish we could fly over to New York and experience the Women's Surf Film Festival in general. I think that would be such a fun week. If only it wasn't clashing with like everything else in terms of WSL finals and being over here in California.
I know, there's just so much going on this week.
Next year we need to like plan for it and fly over to New York.
I'm down with that for sure. That does seem like such a cool film. I can't wait to watch it. And nose riding is just my favorite thing to do in surfing. And I think the entire world should experience it because it's so fun and feels so good. So I love that they've just made an entire movie dedicated to it. Another movie, Rachel, that has, well, we got to see the premiere that's been making its rounds around California is Log Wrap 2, which is available. Woohoo! For purchase on their website, you can actually purchase a USB that will be mailed to your house and you can watch it at home. It is the coolest.
So Ryan is the guy who runs Log Wrap and has created the entire brand of Log Wrap, which is so awesome. And that is just like the most classic. I totally see Ryan doing that. That is so awesome. I love that. I love the like commitment to getting it out there. And in such like a, you know, not just like selling it online. Like that makes me want to go and get it more. I want a USB with the merch. Mail to me. The whole point.
You can literally go to logwrap.com and then click on the Log Wrap 2 movie bundle, which is right there at the start of the page. And they will send you a bundle, which includes the official Log Wrap 2 graphic tee, custom USB preloaded with the movie, two party cups, and a sticker.
Well, Shannon, if we order it, I still have my Log Wrap 1 shirt. You can wear the Log Wrap 2 shirt. We can drink out of the party cups and have Perfect. Our own premiere, our second time around.
So fun. We'll definitely have to get our eyes back on it because the night that we went to the premiere in Costa Mesa was a very crowded venue. We'll say that. It was a little busy.
It was busy.
But some of the women specifically that are in it, because there are so many surfers, I'm not even going to take the time to read through all the names on the list, but the women that we get to see do some beautiful nose riding there as well. Kalise Kaleopa'a, Marina Carbonell, Cassia Miedor, Avalon Gall, Hallie Rohr, Honolua Bloomfield. That's just so stacked with some of the best longboarders currently in the world.
Yeah, amazing talent. And a lot of their clips are from here in Southern California or over in Hawaii. And it's just really great surfing to watch. And I love all those surfers. A lot of them are such good friends. And I love supporting anything Log Wrap does too.
And yeah, go follow Log Wrap on Instagram because if you're like me and you're not actually a fan of rap music, but you love logging, he somehow found this beautiful combination and I'm okay with rap music now.
You're okay with it. That's great. I think it's just awesome, just to pump him up one more time, is that, you know, something dedicated so like niche and awesome to longboarding and is just continuously coming out with great clips and just really fun clips of a bunch of longboarders too. And I think it's one of the best things that we have in longboarding right now in terms of film and content.
He's definitely nailing it, and it's been really fun to have him around the contest this year.
So another edit, Shannon, that we wanted to talk about. This is 4 out of 5 edits that we're throwing onto your all
we're
your
just
listeners'
dumping
list.
A plate of edits on the table.
Dumping them all onto the table, not just dumping them. Dumping them on into the DVD players.
Yeah.
Is Glad You Scored, which is Dane Reynolds' movie. And we are talking about it because Holly Wan is the only woman featured in it, and she just does some amazing surfing in it.
Yeah, Holly gets some really good footage dropped into this. It's a Chapter 11 film presented by Vans, and Holly's a Vans team writer. She's out of Australia originally, and she just has one of the most powerful like front side hacks, I think, in the women's field of surfing at the moment. She's a really powerful surfer regardless, but the footage, there's a lot of really good stuff of her in Indo and then some stuff in Mexico as well. And I loved that Holly got to go on those trips with a bunch of the boys who just took this trip around to a bunch of different places. And the title, Glad You Scored, they talk about it through the movie, but of just kind of questioning every trip that they go on. They'd like get some footage of them landing back at the airport, like back at home. And Dane Reynolds and the guys like discussing, okay, did they get enough actual good footage to present it to Vans to be like, hey, here's the film that you have given us a ton of budget and paid for. Like, be happy with the footage that we got. And they keep doubting themselves, like trip after trip. So they keep adding on more trips, going for bigger, heavier waves, going for barrels, going for some trick waves. Like they do a trip to Indo at the end just to do airs and try and get some like different footage like that. And really cool to see that Holly got the call up to join in on that. And especially coming off of the Vans US Open, because for that event, we had so many of the Vans team writers that joined us in the broadcast. And it's just all encompassed, right? The Vans team writers typically like make the artwork. That's the branding for the entire event. And they get their voice on the webcast. And it's just this really fun contest. And so we got to have Holly in the booth with us a bunch there and got to kind of hear her thoughts on the competitive surf scene, which she's so much a part of in Australia, but has also taken some time away from now. And Rachel, one of the days during the US Open, I had my family come down, and it was the first time that my family was able to come down to see me like on the job at work.
Yay!
Which was really fun because I'm always working contests that are not in California. It's like actually rare that I work events here where I grew up. And so my parents came down and they brought down my niece and two of my nephews. So Adeline, Levi, and Dane were there. And we're like walking them around the contest site. I've already showed them like where our host set is and where the broadcast runs from. And my dad got to meet Pete Mel, which was like, he turned into like a gushing teenager. He was so like excited to meet Pete. He didn't even know how to talk. It was awesome. The kids were mostly just confused about what we were doing there, except for Adeline. She's 10. And so she like had a good understanding that this is where I work and everything. But we're like walking through the contest site. And you know how big it is there for the US Open. There's just like,
yes,
booths everywhere of everything. And we come around this corner and in front of us is Dane Reynolds. And my nephew, little Dane, is named after Dane Reynolds, who is my brother Jake's favorite surfer. And so my dad and I go into this mode, like we were not playing it cool in the slightest. And had I been there, like going to grab an interview with him for work, like for the broadcast, it would have just been like, I would have been so relaxed and like, fine. But I was like, oh my gosh, Dane Reynolds is right there. Little Dane is here. We have to get a picture of the two of them together because it's his namesake. And so my dad and I kind of like, yeah, my dad and I kind of like jump in full fledged, right? Also, Dane Reynolds is like really quiet and like super mellow and a little bit awkward. And so is little Dane. Like he takes after his namesake perfectly. And so we kind of like rushed into the play a little bit too quickly. And before we knew it, little Dane was just like head down, super quiet. He's only 5. In no way was he going to have his picture taken with this stranger. And he doesn't like aww, complain or cry or anything. He just like gets real quiet, puts his head down, and then just slowly starts walking behind something, whether it's like people he knows or like getting himself out of the situation. But I've already jumped in and I'm like, hi, Dane Reynolds. I'm Shannon. This is my nephew, Dane. He was named after you. Can we get a photo together? And he's like being super nice. And he's like, yeah, of course. Like, nice to meet you, Dane. And like little Dane's just like now hiding in the sand.
Oh. Just like digging his head into the sand.
Like that's exactly what he's trying to do. Like get away from the situation as quickly as possible. So we like definitely pushed it for far too long and like didn't quite read the room as quickly as we should have to just be like, okay, let's just defuse the situation. Little Dane's not going to have it. Thank you, Big Dane, for like being cool. Anyways, in the end, Big Dane's like trying to console Little Dane, like get Little Dane to come take a photo with him and just like have a chat with him, you know, like he's being really nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, Little Dane was not gonna have a piece of it. So at the end of it all, I got my photo taken with Dane Reynolds and my niece Adeline, which just felt like, great. Why did I even include myself in that? Like Adeline, we should have gotten a photo of Adeline with Dane. Like that's a really cool thing. But suddenly like I was there getting my photo taken with Adeline and Dane.
Can we please post this on our Instagram? Yeah, oh my gosh.
And then after all this finishes.
Dane's biggest fan.
Yeah. Dane Reynolds walks away. Like we say thanks to him. We're like, sorry, man, you know, the kid is shy. But it's also like exactly what Dane Reynolds would be doing is like feeling shy in this moment and not wanting to be the center of attention.
Totally.
Like, Little Dane doesn't want to be center of
attention. It fits that like
it fits
Little
perfectly.
Dane and Big Dane are
yeah, they're just like
the same person. But
yeah.
Big Dane did handle himself better in the situation.
Big Dane did well.
Dane Sr.
Dane Sr. did very well. We did get a picture after he had walked away of like Little Dane looking kind of sad and like distant. With Big Dane walking away in the background. So it's like back of Big Dane's head with Little Dane.
Perfect.
So, you know, moment was captured.
Can be framed.
It can be framed.
Your brother can now frame that.
Anyways, what? You guys should go watch Glad You Scored because it's really good and Holly was shredding.
Absolutely. Well, the last film edit video that we are adding to your list this week in our hot topic of new films is just a short two and a half minute edit, Shannon, right? Of Laura Coviella surfing over in the Mentawais. And it's called Tequila Blackout. And she is basically just charging in different barrels. And it is such a fun little edit. And definitely it's quick and worth your while to watch.
Yeah, she looked like she was just having so much fun, looked like it was good crew to be on a trip with, and got some really good barrels. Love seeing that there's a few more girls getting to do trips to the Mentawais recently as well. Actually a whole crew of Australians, but on different trips. So Sarah Baum, who's been competing on the Challenger Series this year, and we've mentioned her name since we've had this podcast quite a few times, is one of those that deserves a spot, I think, on the CT right now, but has just fallen short with some results to get there. She just did a trip to the Mentawais with her dad, and she's posted a couple of clips from it, but has kind of hinted that she's got some really good footage that we haven't seen yet. So I'm curious to see what Balmy does with that footage, if we get a cool little edit out of it, if she keeps trickling it through on her feed, but some really good barrels. And then Bronte McCauley, Championship Tour surfer, took a trip with her partner, Will, and with the Hardy sisters, Willow and Olive, and I think they just absolutely scored as well. So
yeah,
cool to see
like such
that
a fun time.
The girls are getting to have some really fun trips and getting to search after some kind of those reefy, heavier barrels as well. Possibly because we had a wave like Tahiti on the calendar this year for the CT.
Well, yeah, the Mentawais is a great place to find a bunch of different waves. And Shannon, I went there and I was there for 10 days, my last surf before leaving. My first wave of my last surf, my board hit my face and my bottom teeth went through my lip. And I just like, obviously it really hurt. No, I didn't get stitches because it was like, I'm pointing to my face right now. It was like,
black screen.
It was clear enough. It was like straight enough of a cut that they thought that it might heal on its own. So we waited, they wanted to wait 24 hours before like potentially giving it stitches to see how it started to heal. And fortunately, it started to heal like fine on its own. It was just like a clean slice right under my bottom lip. And when like it hit my face, I knew because of the pain, something was wrong. And I like started hitting all my teeth to like make sure my teeth were there. And like all my teeth were there. I'm like, okay, I'm still in a lot of pain. So I like pull my lip out and I just see like blood everywhere. And I was like, oh no. So I paddled over to one of the guys on the trip with me and I was like, what's going on in my face right now? And he's like, oh my gosh. Okay. Don't panic. I think your bottom teeth have gone through your lip and you have just like, you have a cut there now. Let's just get back to the boat. And I'm not someone who's like queasy really at the sight of blood or anything, but I don't know. It was just a concoction. I had a papaya for breakfast. That I think might have been like a little rotten. And I don't know, I literally nearly almost fainted. It was just like, I felt so horrible. I just couldn't believe. I think it was more also the fact of like, ew, my teeth went through my lip. That's so gross.
That's so terrible.
But yeah, unfortunately it was on the last day. So I didn't really miss out on any surfing besides that last session. And unfortunately the guys did too, because we had to go back to the camp.
Well, I never would have known because you don't have a big scar on your chin or your lip.
Thank you. I was really nervous because it did start to scar, and I put like that scar oil, the bio oil, on it every night.
Oh yeah.
Hoping that it'd go away. And I mean, it's still there. If I like, again, you can't see me and I'm pointing to it again.
if I
suck my lips in, you know, like do that. I'm sure you can tell like what I'm doing by the sound.
Yeah.
Then you can like see it. It highlights it. So anyways, the Mentawai's is a really fun place. And I hope Laura had just as much fun. And thinking by tequila blackout, I'm sure she, it sounds like she had some, probably
like
at least
you had
one
a tequila
fun
blackout
night
when you were there.
Something like that. Our second news story for this week is that the Queen of the Bay event needs new sponsorship. So Queen of the Bay, Shannon, is the first all-women big wave surfing event that was announced to be held in Waimea Bay. It's kind of like the women's version of the Eddie Aikau event. And it was kicked off in 2017, but because of the waiting periods and like not having good enough conditions, and then COVID, of course, it actually hasn't run. And Red Bull has been the title sponsor of the event. But now I guess I am guessing because they're investing so much into Red Bull Magnitude and they have that series going on now, they have now pulled back their sponsorship of this event. And so Bonsai Betty has announced that she's now looking for new sponsorship for this event.
Yeah, I love that Red Bull was backing the event for 5 years, essentially, for 3 years, 2017, 2018, and 2019, although it wasn't able to run, and then with COVID, it getting canceled. But there's a lot of money that's needed for this new sponsorship, and Bonsai Betty put out an ask that they're looking for by September 15th. They need to have a sponsorship agreement of $100,000, and I'm guessing that that is mostly going just to keep the permit, which means that Red Bull was forking out that money without even being able to run the event, which was awesome that they did it for as long as they did. But they're now looking for some new sponsorship dollars. And one of the good things that Bonsai Betty was able to achieve for this year's waiting period is that she's actually gotten it to be extended through till December, where in the past few years, the season has been early season, October, November, which is just a little bit too early for most of those bigger swells to be hitting Hawaii anyways. So it makes sense that they weren't able to actually run at Waimea. But this year she got it extended through December, which is huge, which gives it a better possibility of running. But now they need some big sponsorship dollars to be able to make it happen. Now, it's pretty incredible that Bonsai Betty has been able to even secure this permit. It's a 3-year permit. So I think probably that they need to get that sponsorship money in for this year. And if they don't, they might lose the permit for the next 2 years as well. But she's such a powerhouse that I feel like she's got the connections and she's going to be doing all the work she can behind the scenes to try to gain that sponsorship dollars. She was also part of the founding group of women's pro surfers back in the 60s. So she's been pouring into the scene for much longer than you or I have even been around, Rachel.
Yes.
She competed on the tour. She created the first all women's comp at Pipeline and the first, obviously, big wave contest in Queen of the Bay. So we have so much that we can thank her for, including most recently getting the Honolulu City Council to change their ordinances to bring women back to the North Shore, which is why the championship tour event included women at Pipeline this year. So much of that is all the result of Bonsai Betty, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more history that involves Betty DePolito in some way or another that we can be thankful for.
Yeah, I think, all the work that she's poured into women's surfing and progressing women's surfing. And this is just another one of those things, and all the effort that she's put into it so far. I really hope that she's able to see it through and we're able to see it come to life and take place this year and get the backing it needs to continue on.
And now for our third news update, back to the regional QS. So last week we talked about the Vans Pro happening in Virginia Beach. And we actually missed the fact, Rachel, that this year's Vans Pro was the very first time that women have been included in over a decade of the men's contest running.
Yeah, I can't believe we missed that. But I'm glad we're highlighting it now. Alyssa Spencer ended up winning the event, so congrats to Alyssa. And Sawyer Lindblad actually came runner-up, and so because of that result, she's still overall leading the North American rankings. But it looks like they got some waves, and I'm stoked that they had women a part of it this year.
Yeah, so good. Saw quite a few of the girls that were competing in it just looking like they were having a really great time there in Virginia Beach this week. And then in the European region, Yolanda Hopkins is on an absolute roll. She took out the win at the Rip Curl Pro Anglet after already winning Board Masters. So in 2 out of 3 events in the 3-event European series that has just taken place, Yolanda's taken out 2 of them.
Wow, that consistency is so impressive. And it's that consistency that we saw from Gabriella Bryan on the Challenger Series last year and was the reason that she ended up winning Rookie of the Year. And I just think that consistency is probably the most important thing that alludes to or creates success for these surfers. And so the fact that she's showing that consistency now in that European Series, I think, is a really good indicator for what we might continue to see from her potential in the Challenger Series.
Yeah, it's huge. Even thinking of another Portuguese surfer, that's where Yolanda is from, and Teresa Bonvalo. She's won so many European QSs over the years, and last year at the start of this year, heading into this year's Challenger Series, she was that surfer, that woman that was getting multiple wins, you know, back to back to back. And she walked away with her very first Challenger Series win this year at Manly, which was huge. And so that consistency is playing off for her as well. And just exciting to see Yolanda finding some more of that success. And then down to the South American region, Silvana Lima took out a win at a QS 1000 in Brazil. She took out Daniela Rosas in the final and in back-to-back heats between her semifinal and her final. Silvana had over 16-point heat totals, which we call an excellent heat total.
Yeah, she just continues to be such a dominant force, and she's such a powerful surfer, and it's no surprise to me that we're still seeing her on top of the podium. Our fourth news story of this week, Shannon, we wanted to highlight the Roxy Vahine Cup that just took place over in Tahiti. It's the 6th edition of this annual event, and they had over 60 women in the event this year with multiple divisions across longboard, shortboard, bodyboard, and SUP. And it's just so great to see an event take place right after the CT event was just over there. And I think, you know, with the women competing over there for the first time and events like Rising Tides and stuff happening alongside the event, there probably just would have been a lot of energy and momentum for the women that do live over in Tahiti watching this. So the fact that the timing of this event happened right after the fact and they all got to compete together, I think it just looked like it was a really great event and just had so much energy and excitement behind it.
Yeah, it really looked like something that you and I would really enjoy being a part of. And I love that it's happened, like you said, just after the WSL was there. So just so much momentum. And probably for a lot of those young girls and, you know, even like adult women that would have been competing in that event, for them to have just watched their hero surf at one of the scariest waves, and then to be able to just band together and have a fun contest. I'm sure super competitive as well, but really cool to see Roxy behind that and another great event happening there in Tahiti. I'll go ahead and list through the winners for the longboard and the shortboarding divisions, Rachel, and I will put out the disclaimer right now that I will probably be butchering these names, so I do apologize ahead of time.
Good luck.
Thank you. taking out the junior longboard division was Soene Fawa. I love, Rachel, that they had a juniors longboard division as well as an open longboard division, because that's Woo-hoo. Just not always that common. Taking out the open longboards division was Vaimiti Teufitu. And then Kiara Gold took out the under 13s and the under 16s. Super impressive to win on both age divisions with quite a big age gap, you know, being probably 12 to 13 years old, taking out the under 16s. And then of the Fierro sisters, where we saw Vahine as a wild card into the women's event for the Outer Known Tahiti Pro, her little sisters battled it out in the under 18 final, and it was the younger sister in Kohai Fierro who beat Haimiti Fierro in the finals.
Yeah, Shannon, Kohai actually also beat Haimiti in the open finals too. which the Fierro sisters are all such good surfers, such dominant forces. And I feel like probably they have just that like natural sisterly competitive rivalry. And so I'm sure for Kohai, that was a fun little tip for her that she, being the youngest, was able to beat her older sister, but great surfing from all of them.
So great to see that event running and can't wait to see how it goes next year.
Our final segment for this week, Shannon, is a conversation that you were able to have with Tatiana Weston-Webb in the lead up to the finals, coming in as number 3 on the rankings. And yeah, just getting to chat to her about what this preparation, what this week is looking like in the lead up to her competing for a world title next week.
Yeah, it was so much fun to be able to catch up with Tati. So thankful that she just had a few minutes of time to share with us. And really proud of her for making it into the finals again. We talk about a few different things in the interview, but just everything that she went through after walking away second place last year, for her to find the momentum again this year in competition to qualify herself for the finals was just so impressive. And I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. So you're currently in Kauai, Tati. When are you heading back to California?
I'm headed to California tomorrow morning.
Awesome. And are you feeling pretty ready for everything that's coming?
Yeah, I feel really ready. I think what I really was focused on this week was to hone in on my physical side of, you know, our sport. And I know that obviously surfing has tons to do with it, but on the finals day specifically, we have to surf at, well, to win the title, you'd have to surf at least 4 heats. So for me, and so I'm just trying to focus on the physicality of it all. And then once I get to Cali, I'm going to work on my equipment and see which boards I'm going to use for finals day.
That's amazing. So being that it is your second time for the Rip Curl WSL finals, is that some of the changes that you're kind of bringing into this year's approach, that focus on your physical side, or was that similar to last year?
I will say yes, because I felt very exhausted after the 3rd heat of the finals. Actually, I even felt exhausted after the 2nd heat. Okay. So it was just a lot of energy and a lot of pressure to deal with. And I think that really takes a toll on you physically, other than the fact of you like surfing heats. So I really focused this year on trying to prep my body for it. And I've just been training lots here at home and working on my cardio. And and then once I get to Cali, I'm going to obviously surf lowers. It's not a super complicated wave. I've been surfing it since I was 12 years old. So
yeah,
I'm used to the wave. But obviously, you know, we do what we can. And this is the way I think I'm best prepared.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. Will your team be looking similar with Ross Williams and with Greg Browning?
Yeah, correct. I'm going to have Greg and Ross with me and also my husband, Jesse. Myers.
Of course.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's talk about your season. I mean, overall, you've been pretty open and honest with us about it being pretty tough after such an amazing second place finish last year. But within that, you still managed to get 2 wins to your name and you're number 3 in the world heading into the finals this year. I would love to just know how the year as a whole is sitting with you.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because I think I just wasn't ready for the start of the season. I just really felt mentally and physically not ready for the types of waves that we had to confront right away, like Pipeline and Sunset.
Crazy.
And it just was a really strange start to the year, but I'm so glad that I did really well in Portugal because that obviously helped me qualify through the cut. And obviously that was tons of new pressure that had never been added to us before. And I think it was just like pressure after pressure after pressure. And I was just like, oh man, like how much of this can I handle? And actually I never really told anyone this, but when I went to the Snapper at the CS at Snapper, I had gotten COVID and I had to be isolated in a hotel room for 7 days in Australia by myself after all of that. And I was just so devastated. And that was the 3rd time I got COVID in the year already.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
It was terrible. So I actually felt even more mentally drained than I've probably ever felt in my life. Like I didn't think I was going to like get through it. I had to call a psychologist and have him help me through it and everything. And I think after that, it was just such a terrible like little moment in my life, which obviously in the scheme of things, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I was so dramatic during all of it. But I think once you get through like a little hard mental battle like that, and then all of a sudden you come out on top and then you have everything to look forward to, like surfing G-Land, you know, going and being with my husband and traveling around the world and doing what I love to do and being, you know, physically and mentally fit, I think it's just something that I took for granted. And it really reset my whole mentality. And I think that really helped with the back half of my tour, where I just was just beyond appreciative to have every opportunity that was lying in front of me. And I just wanted to surf and have fun. And, you know, that was when I began to love heats again. I began to be like, oh my gosh, this is the best, you know? And so that's when my whole like mentality switched. And yeah, I'm just really grateful for everything that happened. Even though it was hard, it made me a better person.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's crazy that, yeah, coming out of all of that pressure and just the physical and the emotional toll that it takes, I think overall for all of you guys making it past the cut and then to go through COVID for the third time, that's honestly, that's so wild. I can't imagine it. I had it once and it was really rough. But talking about those next opportunities, I love hearing how refreshed you felt then heading into the rest of the season and just being able to take advantage of it, being with Jesse and being on the road. I would love to know your thoughts on Tahiti. It was obviously a massive opportunity for the women to be back there at Te Hupo. What was your takeaway from your time there?
Yeah, I think the whole time I was in Tahiti, I just kept like pinching myself because I was like, oh my gosh, like we're here. Like the women are here, you know, like it was just such a win in itself that I was like just so beyond myself to be a part of an event at Chopu and to be obviously in a CT, like you're just like, what the heck is happening? So I don't know. I was just so psyched the whole time. I was like, this is the coolest ever. And it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Let's be real. So like, just to be able to have those two things coincide and have an amazing opportunity for women's surfing to evolve was just, I was just really happy to even be there, you know?
So cool. And talk to me about that semifinal result. I feel like so many of us just see you surfing a wave like Te Hupo and it just fits together. It's like a perfect picture. I'm guessing that you would have been hopeful for finals, but how do you feel with your performance overall?
Thank you. I would say that I wasn't like anywhere near what I could do at Chopes, but and not to say like I wasn't proud of my performance because I was. There was a lot of really difficult heats and difficult moments that I had to get through and kind of just put my head down and make heats. And that sometimes is the hardest thing when you're surfing a wave like Chopu. You know, you want to catch the best wave of your life. And then all of a sudden you're like, no, I'm in a heat. Like I got to just get two scores and make the heat and beat the other person in the water. So that was really difficult for me, but I ended up, you know, obviously making it all the way to semis. And it just felt like, yeah, like I said, I was just so excited to be a part of it. And I didn't really care about my performance as long as I was like making heats. And obviously I wish that my heats were like a tad bit better. I think my quarter and my semi both went like straight on shore. And I was super
sad.
Such
a shame.
I was just like, oh man, why my heats? But like, you know, maybe God's telling me like, just chill out and surf your heat the way you need to surf a heat and get scores. And so obviously I didn't make the semi, but I did make the quarter, which for me was a really big win against Caroline.
Yeah, that was huge.
Thank you. Yeah. So I was really happy with myself. And just like I said, again, to have the woman at Tahiti was a win in itself. So I just really felt blessed to be there.
So good. And feeling blessed as well to be back into the finals. And just, I guess, as the last kind of throw out question, your feeling overall heading back to Trestles?
Yeah, feelings overall heading back to Trestles is excitement. I'm really excited to have another opportunity. And I'm just taking a second to like acknowledge the fact that last year was so difficult for me after getting second that I don't want it to be that again. I want to be proud of my performance regardless of what I do. And I know I'm going to give it 110% and do everything I can. And even if I come second or first, whatever, who cares, third, fourth, even, I don't care. But I just want to be stoked on my performance and come out of it with freaking biggest smile on my face and really grateful. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So well said. Thank you so much for the time and cannot wait to see you ripping out at Trestles.
Awesome. Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks.
Well, that was a really great chat, Shannon. It's so great to just hear where Tatiana's at, and I am really looking forward to seeing her compete.
I am so excited to see her out there. And I just love that she shared with us a few of those really honest things that she's been really open in posty interviews and Instagram posts this year anyways, as have so many of the women on tour we've been talking about. But just that she's sitting in a different place with things this year, where she really wants to try to enjoy every moment of finals day. She obviously wants to win, and she's super hungry for a world title, and she's been working so hard, like she was saying, from the physical aspect. Like, I'm sure she's been doing runs and cardio and lifting weights, really to just be ready physically for the toll that it's going to take on her body.
Mm.
And she's working on her equipment now that she's, you know, flying over to California in the next day or two. But I love that her mindset is just in a little bit of a different place to where it was last year, and really looking to enjoy the moment. And I think also that way she can walk away with it feeling just proud of all that she has accomplished this year. Whether it's a world title, which would be so cool, or it's just another finish in that top five, which is really exceptional as well. That was so fun to talk to her about, and just to hear more of those insights about how her year went. I mean, getting COVID for her third time after making the cut at Margaret River, then to be stuck with COVID, actually the same timing as you, Rachel, on the Gold Coast.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I'm, yeah. Anyways,
I wonder if we got it together.
Probably. I mean, there was a few of that crew from Margaret River that ended up with it that week. And so it clearly was going around, but for her to have to go through that and to check in with a psychologist and just to be willing to share that with us, I thought was really special. And yeah, I'm so happy that she was able to bounce back and just find enjoyment in the rest of her season.
Well, thank you so much to Tati for the chat and taking the time to have that conversation with us.
Well, that was a fun week, Rachel. Love talking through those films. We've got a few to watch that we haven't seen already, and so much else that's been going on around the surf world. And next week with the WSL finals, we've got a whole lot more in store.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
See you next week.